Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Cade.
And you're listening to
Mysterious Mysteries 21. We will be talking about
the freeway killer today. Some of the materials we will be discussing is very graphic.
Listener discretion is advised.
So sit back,
relax,
and enjoy.
Enjoy.
You'll get it one of these days.
It's every time. Every time.
So today we're going to be talking about William George Bonin. A.K.A. known as the... What was it? Freeway? Yeah, it was Freeway Killer. Because there's a freeway and a highway. Killer. So, Freeway Killer. Born January 8th of 1947 and died February 23rd of 1996. He was an American serial killer and twice paroled sex offender who committed the rape, torture, and murder of a minimum of 21 boys and young men in a series of killings in 1979 through 1980 in Southern California. Bonin is also suspected of committing a further 15 murders, described by the prosecutor at the first trial as the most arch-evil person who had ever existed. Bonin was convicted of 14 of the murders linked to the Freeway Killer in two separate trials in 1982 and 1983. He spent 14 years on death row before he was executed by lethal injection at San Quentin State Prison in 1996.
So they let him wait a while.
I don't understand why they, whenever you're sentenced to death, I don't understand why it takes so long for some of these killers to actually, be put down, more or less. Alright, so Bonin became known as a freeway killer due to the fact that the majority of his victims' bodies were discovered alongside numerous freeways in Southern California. He shares this epithet, with two separate and unrelated serial killers, Patrick Kearney and Randy Kraft. So, in early life, in his childhood, this kind of shows why he is the way he is, why he did the things he did mentally, physically, and emotionally. So, William Bonin was born in Willimantic, Connecticut. I think I spelled that right. Said that right. On January 8th of 1947, the second of three sons born to Robert and Alice Bonin. Bonin's parents were alcoholics, and his father was a compulsive gambler who was physically abusive towards his wife and children. Bonin and the brothers were severely neglected as children and were often fed and clothed by sympathetic neighbors. In addition, the brothers were often placed in the care of their grandfather, a convicted child molester, who had molested Bonin's mother when she had been a child and adolescent, and who was known to have sexually abused his three grandsons.
So already just...
Oh yeah, he had a shit childhood.
Oh yeah.
Alright, and this was early 50s, late 40s, whenever all this went to pass. So in 1953, Bonin's mother placed her sons in an orphanage in an effort to protect her children from their father's physical violence. This orphanage was known to severely discipline the children it housed for minor and major breaches of conduct, with the punishment administered including severe beatings, enduring various stress positions, and partial drownings in sinks filled with water. Although Bonin later freely discussed many aspects of his children and adolescence, he refused to discuss his memories of the orphanage beyond divulging that he consented to a sexual advance from older males only if they would first tie his hands behind his back. He was to remain at the orphanage until the age of 9 when he returned to live with his parents in the town of Mansfield.
What the...
He's already had a screwed up childhood, and God knows what the grandfather did to him, and maybe that could have been... maybe the grandfather did the same thing, and that was the only way he could, get off. This one's really fucked up. Like, really, really messed up.
Like, I know a little bit about this, but not all this.
Like, I feel bad for the kid, but, as he grows up, he turns into a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
That definitely deserved to die. So, Bonin is known to have molested his younger brother and several neighborhood children. Many of these children were lured into Bonin's home with the promise of alcohol, and all his known victims were younger than he was. In addition to these acts of molestation, Bonin is known to have committed several acts of robbery, petty theft, grand theft in his teenage years, which that's one of the key factors of a serial killer is robbery at a young age. That's one of the big ones.
Along with killing animals and...
Yeah, and setting fires, wetting the bed, all that fun stuff. So, shortly after graduating from high school in 1965, Bonin became engaged to Mary. This engagement had largely been at the behest of his mother, who believed that the prospect of marriage would quell her son's evident homosexuality. Same year of his graduation, Bonin joined the U.S. Air Force. He later served 5 months of active duty in the Vietnam War as an aerial gunner, logging over 700 hours of combat and patrol time.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Bonin was later claimed his experience in Vietnam had installed the belief within him that human life is overvalued. So, that's another piece to the pie that created this sociopath.
Yeah. You're in the military, it changes people either for good or for bad.
This one definitely for worse.
Oh, yeah.
On occasion, while under enemy fire, he risked his own life to save the life of a wounded fellow airman. For this act, Bonin received the Medal of Recognition of his gallantry. Bonin later claimed he had engaged in consensual sexual relations with males and females in Vietnam. He also later admitted to sexually assaulting two fellow soldiers at gunpoint during the period of a Tet offense. So, definitely didn't help with his sexuality, especially being in close proximity to a bunch of other guys.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't get prison time for assault with a deadly weapon at that point.
Especially against other, soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Because I'm sure, even today, men who have been raped don't typically say anything because it makes them feel weak and vulnerable, and it makes them feel like a woman, because to them, only women can be raped, unfortunately. And it's not likely for men.
Exactly. Definitely not the model soldier.
No. So, Bonin served 3 years in the U.S. Air Force before he received an honorable discharge in October of 1968.
I don't know.
So, upon his discharge, Bonin returned to Downey to live with his mother. Shortly thereafter, he married his fiancée, and the couple soon divorced. So, his first conviction was on November 17th of 1968 at the age of 21. Bonin committed a sexual assault on a youth. He was to commit 3 further sexual assaults upon boys and youths over the following 4 months. The victims of these 4 assaults were aged between 12 and 18. In each instance, he bound or otherwise restrained his victim before forcibly engaging in sodomy, oral copulation, and methods of torture, which included bludgeoning and squeezing of his victim's testicles. Yeah. This guy's a piece of shit.
No, don't. No. What? No.
So, in early 19...
Hurt.
Oh, yeah, it definitely hurt. But in early 1969, Bonin was arrested as he attempted to restrain a 16-year-old youth whom he had lured into his vehicle. He was indicted on 5 counts of kidnapping, 4 counts of sodomy, and 1 count of oral copulation, and 1 count of child molestation against the 5 youths he had abducted and assaulted, or in the case of the final youth he had abducted, attempted to assault since that previous November. Bonin pleaded guilty to the molestation and forced oral copulation and was sentenced to the Tuscatero State Hospital. Anyways, as a mentally disordered sexual offender, considered...
Because it was the 60s.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I could see that happening in the 60s.
A lot of weird stuff, like 90% of the recipes coming with having Jell-O in them.
Yep. But he was said to have treatment done in January of 1971. While detained at the hospital, Bonin was subjected to a battery of psychiatric examinations, which revealed that he possessed a higher than average IQ of 121. He displayed traits of manic depression in addition to the damage of the prefrontal cortex of his brain, which would likely reduce his ability to restrain any violent impulses. Bonin's physical examination also revealed extensive scarring to his head and buttocks, which he had likely sustained in the 3 years he had been housed at the Connecticut Juvenile Detention Center, although he claimed to have no memory of any such incidents of the abuse.
So he was actually, like, IQ of one over 120. Like,
I mean, that's almost there with, like, the super, super, super smart people.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the serial killers that I've noticed also have scar tissues or have had any kind of bludgeoning force to the head.
Yeah.
Apparently that sets them off or detaches something from reality. So 2 years after his arrival at the state hospital, Bonin was sent to prison, declared unsuitable for further treatment, largely due to his repeatedly engaging in forcefully sexual activity with male inmates. On June 11th of 1974, he was released from prison after doctors concluded he was no longer a danger to his health and safety to others. Then we go into further offenses and his imprisonment. So on September 8th of 1974, Bonin encountered a 14-year-old named David Allen McVicker hitchhiking in Garden Grove. McVicker accepted Bonin's offer to drive him to his parents' home in Huntington Beach. Shortly after McVicker had entered Bonin's vehicle, he was taken aback by Bonin's asking him if he was gay. When McVicker asked Bonin to stop his car, Bonin produced a gun and drove the youth to the deserted field, where he ordered McVicker to undress, then beat and raped him. After beating and assaulting McVicker, Bonin began to strangle the youth with his own t-shirt. And immediately became apologetic when McVicker began screaming. He then drove McVicker home before casually stating, "We'll meet again."
Holy sh...
Mm-hmm. And I also want to say this is the only one he lets live? Out of all of them?
Holy shit.
And as you can tell, this didn't stop.
Yeah, no.
So, McVicker immediately informed his mother of the rape. She, in turn, notified Garden Grove police shortly thereafter. Bonin was charged with the rape and forceful oral copulation of a minor and the attempted abduction of a 15-year-old, which had occurred 2 days after Bonin had assaulted McVicker. In the second instant, Bonin had sexually propositioned a 15-year-old who had rejected Bonin's offer of $35 for sex. In response, Bonin had attempted to strike the youth with his vehicle. Bonin pled guilty to these charges on December 31st of 1975. He was sentenced to serve between 1 to 15 years imprisonment to be served at the California Men's Facility in San Luis Obispo. He was released from detention on October 11th of 1978, albeit within 18 months supervised probation. So just like Jerry McFadden, he never stayed his full sentence.
Just kept getting released.
Yep. Alright, so upon his release, Bonin moved to an apartment complex in Downey, approximately 1 mile from his mother's home, and soon found employment as a truck driver for the Montebello, sure, we're going to call that, delivery firm. Named Dependable Drive named Dependable Drive Away. He also established a reputation among teenage boys in his neighborhood as a gregarious individual who allowed them to socialize in his apartment and who brought alcohol for minors. In addition, Bonin dated a young woman whom he had informed acquaintances he regularly accompanied to Anaheim on Sundays to partake in her hobby of roller skating.
If some random old guy, older guy, is letting you just come chill.
Well, I mean, he was, what, maybe in his, like, early 20s? So, yeah, about true. Your age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you get...
I mean, I thought it was a bit older.
No, when you get kids about 14, 15 years old, and, you know, a 20-something-year-old wants to hang out with you, you think that's the coolest thing in the fucking world. So, shortly after moving to his apartment... Oh, wait, did I already read that? No, I didn't. Okay. Bonin became acquainted with a 43-year-old neighbor named Everett Fraser. Bonin became a regular attendee at the frequent parties Fraser held in his apartment, and through these social gatherings, he became acquainted with a 20-year-old named Vernon Butts, an 18-year-old named Gregory Miley. Butts, a proclaimed factory worker and part-time magician who held a fascination with occultism, later claimed to have been both fascinated with and terrified of Bonin. While freely admitting to taking the great delight in watching Bonin's abuse and torture of his victims, Miley, an illiterate Texas native who an IQ of 56, who supported himself with casual work, also actively participated in the murders he accompanied Bonin upon. Wow, an IQ of 56. I wonder how slow he was. Alright, so now we're about to get into the murder sprees. Alright, so. A second-generation Ford van, Bonin drove an olive-green model of this van when committing his abductions. And I'll probably post the picture of that van on our social media page.
Windowless panel van.
Yeah.
Free ice cream.
Bonin usually selected young male hitchhikers, schoolboys, or occasionally male prostitutes as his victims. The victims, aged range from 12 to 19, were either enticed or forced into the Ford, where they were overpowered and bound hand and foot with a combination of handcuffs, wires, or cords. They were then sexually assaulted, extensively beaten about the face, head, and genitals. And tortured before typically being killed by strangulation with her own t-shirt. Although some victims were stabbed or battered to death, one victim, Darren Kendrick, was forced to drink hydrochloric acid. Three victims had ice picks driven into their ears, and another victim, Mark Shelton, died from shock.
Ice pick?
I'm thinking the hydrochloric acid. You know how horrible of a death that would be?
That would be bad. Ice pick in the ear. Why?
Because it's soft tissue. It'll go straight into the brain.
True.
It'd be like just doing it through the nose or through the eye.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. They fucked up some people. That's for sure.
Hydraulic acid. Why? What?
They're probably just trying to see what was the fastest method.
Probably not.
By stabbing, battered, drinking hydrochloric acid and ice picks. I think there's a couple more as well later on.
And drinking it too, that's...
Forcing them to drink it, so I was holding their mouth open after they severely beat the hell out of them and then making them drink it.
Mm-mm.
That'd be a very slow, painful death. So in order to minimize the chance of potential victim escaping from his vehicle, Bonin removed all inner handles from the passenger side and rear doors of his van and stowed ligatures, knives, household tools, and other instruments in his vehicles to facilitate and restrain the torture of his victims. Victims were usually killed inside his van before their bodies were discarded alongside or close to various freeways in Southern California. In a minimum of 12 of the murders, Bonin was assisted by one or more of his four known accomplices. According to one of the attorney present throughout Bonin's subsequent confession, the escalating levels of brutality he had exhibited towards his victims had been similar to that of a drug addict requiring an ever greater increase of dosage to attain a satisfactory level of euphoria. And Bonin later emphasized to neurologist he had felt an intense sense of excitement as he searched for his victims. So this dude's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, beyond fucked up.
Like, there's adrenaline junkie, and then there's this.
Yeah, this is far worse than adrenaline.
Yeah.
But this is where it really gets fucked up. And the court systems back in the 70s fucking sucked. So the first murder for which Bonin was charged was that of a 13-year-old hitchhiker named Thomas Glenn Lundgren. We're just going to call him Thomas. Thomas was last seen leaving his parents' house in Reseda at 10:50 a.m. on May 28th of 1979. His body clad only in a t-shirt, shoes, and socks. Okay, that makes sense. Was found the same afternoon in Agora. I guess that's a town. An autopsy revealed that Thomas had suffered emasculation and bludgeoning to his face and head, with his skull sustaining multiple fractures. In addition, the youth had been slashed across the throat, extensively stabbed, and strangled to death. His underwear, jeans, and severed genitals were discovered strewn in a field close to his body. In the abduction, the murder of Thomas, Bonin was assisted by Butts, who is suspected of accompanying or assisting Bonin on at least 8 further murders attributed to the freeway killer. In mid-1979, Bonin was again arrested for molesting a 17-year-old boy in a coastal community of Dana Point. This violation of the condition of his parole should have resulted in Bonin being returned to prison. However, an administrative error committed prior to Bonin's scheduled court date resulted in his release. Fraser drove to collect Bonin from the Orange County Jail where he had been incarcerated. He drove Bonin home. Bonin had made a statement which he, Fraser, had interpreted at the time as an expression of remorse. "No one's going to testify again. This is never going to happen to me again."
So he's basically saying right there, "I'm just going to
keep doing it, because y'all can't keep me incarcerated. Y'all keep letting me go, or y'all can't catch me."
Yep.
But yeah, an administrative error committed to where he was set free instead of incarcerated.
How do you lose the paperwork on that? Like,
79.
And that's with the actual hard copy paper.
Uh-huh.
How?
I think there's more to it. I think maybe he knew people inside.
Yeah.
And they made it disappear. So 2 months after the murder of Thomas, on August 4th of 1979, Bonin and Butts abducted a 17-year-old named Mark Shelton. Shortly after, the youth left his Westminster home to walk to a movie theater near Beach Boulevard. Screams were heard from the vicinity of the Shelton household by neighbors, leaving strong possibility Shelton was abducted by force. The youth was violated with foreign objects, including a pool cue.
Jesus. God.
Causing his body to enter a state of shock, which proved fatal. Well, at least he died quick and painlessly. Well, I mean, not painlessly at first, but whenever he was put in shock, I mean, there's nothing else they could have done to the kid. His body was then discarded in San Bernardino County. The following day, Bonin and Butts encountered a 17-year-old West German student named Marcus Grabs. Attempted to hitchhike from Pacific Coast Highway, Grabs was bound with a length of cord and ignition wire and driven to Bonin's home. where he was sodomized, beaten, and stabbed a total of 77 times before his nude body was discarded in Malibu Creek, close to Las Virginas Canyon Road, wherever that is. His body was found the following morning with one investigator linking the network of injuries inflicted upon the victim to that of a rabid dog, unable to determine when to cease biting. Biting and stabbings are two completely different looks. This investigator was fucking stupid.
What? How do you stab someone 77 times?
I think it was accompanied by butts. I think it was both of them combined.
Exactly. I mean, if you're, you know, like, stab like a piece of meat or something, like, that's raw, it's not
easy.
Yeah, no.
After probably about 12 to 13 strikes, you're gonna be wore out, panting. I mean, it's like chopping a tree down.
Exactly.
After about 20 whacks, you're starting to feel it, you're sweating.
You just want to go insane.
Yeah. So, 77 times, I mean, and we also don't know how long he kept the kid in the house. I mean, it could have been a couple days worth. Not sure. On August 27th, Bone and Butts abducted a 15-year-old Hollywood youth named Donald Ray Hayden. Hayden was last seen alive walking along Santa Monica Boulevard at 1 a.m. First off, why the fuck is a 15-year-old walking along a major road at 1 a.m. in the morning? His body was found by construction workers later the same morning in a dumpster located near an off-ramp of Ventura Freeway. Prior to his death, ligature strangulation, Hayden had been bound, beaten about the face, sodomized, and stabbed in the neck and genitalia, and bludgeoned about the skull. Evident attempts had also been made to remove his testicles and slash his throat. 2 weeks after the murder of Hayden, on September 9th, Bonin and Butts encountered a 17-year-old La Mirada youth named David Lewis Murillo. He was cycling to a movie theater. Murillo was lured into Bonin's van, where he was bound, repeatedly raped, extensively bludgeoned about the skull with a tire iron, then strangled with a ligature before his nude body was thrown over the embankment into a bed of ivy alongside Highway 101. 8 days after the murder of Murillo on September 17th, an 18-year-old Newport Beach youth named Robert Christopher Warstick was abducted as he was cycling to a job at a grocery store. His body was found September 27th alongside Interstate 10.
So you would think at some point, you know, they would be like, yeah, it's the same guy.
Or it's the same motive, like they're all connected.
Yeah.
No.
Just.
Yep. They just pretty much just wash their hands, and eventually I think they're going to start connecting it to a specific person. So Bonin is not known to have killed again until on or about November 1st. So he went from September to November. When he and Butts abducted and murdered an unidentified young man approximately 5'10" in height and estimated in between 19 to 25 years old. This victim was severely beaten, then strangled to death before his body was discarded in an irrigation ditch alongside State Route 99 south of Bakersfield. Although never identified, Bonin later estimated the age of this victim to be 23 and freely admitted to inserting an ice pick into the victim's nostril and ear prior to his murder.
That makes my nose hurt.
Yeah. So approximately 4 weeks later, Bonin, operating alone, abducted and strangled a 17-year-old Bellflower youth named Frank Dennis Fox. His body was found 2 days later alongside the Ortega Highway, 5 miles east of San Juan Capistrano?
I think so.
Okay. The body itself bore signs of extensive blunt force trauma to the face and head, with ligature marks on the wrist and ankles indicated Fox had been bound throughout his ordeal. No clothing and or other identifying evidence was discovered at the scene. 10 days after the murder of Box, a 15-year-old Long Beach youth named John Frederick Kilpatrick disappeared. Disappeared after leaving his parents' home to socialize with friends. Kilpatrick was strangled to death before his body was discarded in the remote area of Rialto. His body was found on December 13th. Kilpatrick remained known as a John Doe until August 5th of 1980. Damn. Well, they didn't have really good friends back then either, like they do today.
It's more of a... Does this look like the person? Their head got blown off.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, our DNA stuff today, I mean...
Amazing.
It's a lot easier to identify people.
Yeah.
Instead of just naming John Doe's. On January 1st, 1980... Bonin brutalized and strangled a 16-year-old Ontario youth named Michael Francis McDonald. His fully clothed body was found alongside Highway 71 in western San Bernardino County. 2 days after his murder, although his body was not identified until March 24th. Jesus. So, participations of Gregory Miley. So on February 3rd, Bonin drove from Downey to Hollywood in the company of an 18-year-old Miley with the specific intention of committing a further murder. The pair encountered a 15-year-old named Charles Miranda standing close to the Starwood nightclub, hitchhiking along Santa Monica Boulevard. According to Miley, Bonin and Miranda engaged in consensual sexual activity in the rear of the van as he drove, before Bonin then whispered to Miley, "Kid's going to die." Miranda was then overpowered and bound by Bonin, who then asked the youth how much money he had in his possession. When Miranda responded he had about $6, Bonin ordered Miley to take the youth's wallet before raping his victim. Miley also attempted to rape the youth, but was unable to sustain an erection. In frustration, Miley assaulted Miranda with various sharp objects before assisting Bonin in beating the youth. Bonin then strangled Miranda to death with a t-shirt and a tire iron. As Miley repeatedly jumped on Miranda's chest, his nude corpse was then dumped in an alleyway alongside East 2nd Street in Los Angeles.
Holy shit.
Oh, it gets worse. 5 minutes after the pair discarded Miranda's body, Bonin suggests to Miley, "I'm horny again. Let's go and do another one." A few hours later, in Huntington Beach, the pair encountered a 12-year-old named James McCobb at a bus stop on the corner of Beach Boulevard and Slater Avenue. McCobb was lured into Bonin's van on the promise he would be driven to the intended destination of Disneyland. According to Miley, both entered the rear of the van voluntarily as Bonin drove to the grocery store parking lot, where he parked the van and entered the rear of the vehicle. Miley then drove...
Miley was driving.
Alright, so Miley then drove in an aimless manner for what he later described as being a very, very long distance. As he drove, Miley continually heard McCobb crying as Bonin beat and raped him, before forcing the boy to sleep in his arms. Miley then joined Bonin in beating the child and crushing his neck with a tire iron, simply because he felt like doing so. Bonin then strangled McCabe to death with his own t-shirt before the pair discarded his fully clothed, beaten body alongside a dumpster in the city of Walnut. McCabe's body was found 3 days later.
Holy shit.
Alright, so... went from... let's see, this happened on February 3rd. So on February 4th, Bonin was arrested for violating... the conditions of his parole. He was remained in custody the Orange County Jail until March 4th.
So they finally got him.
Kind of. Until March 4th, they let him out.
Yeah.
Alright, so 10 days after Bonin had been released from custody, on March 14th, he abducted and killed an 18-year-old Van Nuys youth named Ronald Gatlin. Gatlin was abducted shortly after he had left a friend's house. He was beaten, sodomized, and suffered severe deep perforating ice picks wounds to the ear, neck, before being strangled with a ligature. Gatlin's bodies, bound hand and foot, were found the following day in the city of Duarte. 1 week later, on March 21st, Bonin lured a 14-year-old named Glenn Barker into his van as the youth hitchhiked to school. Barker was also raped, beaten, strangled to death with a ligature. His body also bore evidence of numerous burns to the neck, which had been inflicted with a lit cigarette. In addition, Barker had been violated with foreign objects, which had extensively distended his rectum. At 4 p.m. the same day, a 15-year-old named Russell Rowe was abducted from a bus stop in Garden Grove. Rowe was bound, beaten, and strangled to death after an estimated 8 hours of captivity, before his body was discarded alongside of Barker in Cleveland National Forest. The youth's nude bodies were found March 23rd.
And you would think, you know, at this point they'd be like, he's the one.
You would think, but no, they pretty much just kept letting him go every single time. Eventually he gets caught, of course, but
yeah.
Trying to see.
Yeah.
I was trying to find out where we can do a stopping point for this first episode. Because we're at 36 minutes as of right now. Maybe right there. So, encounter with William, I don't know if it's pronounced Poe or Pug. We're just going to call him Poe.
Skadoosh.
One Friday evening on March 1980, Bonin offered a 17-year-old named William Ray Poe a ride home as a pair left Fraser's residence. Within minutes of accepting the ride, Bonin asked Poe whether he would like to engage in sex with him. Poe later stated he panicked and stuttered upon hearing this question. After sitting in silence for several minutes, attempting to leave the vehicle, once Bonin had slowed the van at a stoplight, in response, Bonin wordlessly leaned across and grabbed Poe by the collar, dragged him back into the passenger seat. According to Poe, Bonin then confided in him that he enjoyed abducting young male hitchhikers on Friday and Saturday nights, whom he then would restrain and abuse before strangling them to death with their own t-shirts. In a matter-of-fact tone, Bonin then informed Poe, "If you want to kill somebody, you should make a plan and find a place to dump the body before you even pick a victim." Bonin then informed Poe he had not chosen to refrain from assaulting and killing him out of sentiment. He'd been spared because the pair had been seen leaving Fraser's party together, so Poe was driven to his home without being assaulted. Very lucky.
Very.
The murder of Harry Turner. March 24th. Bonin and Poe abducted, so Poe is actually... Poe and Butts are, I want to say, three... or two of the three acquaintances that help Bonin. So Bonin and Poe abducted a 15-year-old runaway named Harry Todd Turner from the Los Angeles streets. Turner had absconded from the boys' home in the desert community of Lancaster. 4 days prior to his meeting Bonin and Poe, Poe was to later testify that he and Bonin lured Turner into Bonin's van with an offer of $20 for sex. After binding, sodomizing, and biting the youth, Bonin ordered Poe to beat him, Turner, quote-unquote, up. After Poe had bludgeoned and beat Turner about the head and body for several minutes, Bonin strangled the youth to death with his own t-shirt before discarding his body at the rear delivery door to a Los Angeles business. Turner's autopsy subsequently revealed the youth's genitals had been mutilated and he had received a total of 8 fractures to the skull inflicted by a blunt instrument before he had been strangled.
Probably the beating for a few minutes, yeah.
Yeah, but I think the genitals were mutilated while he was still alive. So, later killings. On the afternoon of April 10th, Bonin abducted a 16-year-old Bellflower youth named Stephen John Wood. As the youth walked to school, having attended a dental appointment that morning. His nude, extensively beaten body was discarded in the alleyway of Long Beach, close to the Pacific Coast Highway. No clothing and or identifying evidence was discovered at the scene. Wood's autopsy revealed the youth had been killed by a ligature strangulation. 3 weeks later, on April 29th, while parked in the grounds of a Staten supermarket, Bonin and Butts lured a 19-year-old employee named Darren Kendrick into Bonin's van on the pretext of selling the youth drugs. Kendrick was driven to Butts' apartment, where he was overpowered and bound by both men. In addition to enduring sodomy and partial ligature strangulation, Kendrick was forced to drink hydrochloric acid by Bonin, causing chemical burns to his mouth, chin, stomach, and chest. Butts then drove an ice pick into Kendrick's ear, causing a fatal wound to the youth's cervical spinal cord.
So he did both of them at the same time.
His body was discarded behind the warehouse close to the Artesia Freeway with the ice pick Butts had driven into his skull, still protruding from his ear.
Why would you leave him in there?
I don't know. Because that would leave evidence, because it didn't talk about them wearing gloves or anything doing
exactly.
This, so you can get fingerprints off of that. But again, we're in the 80s. So.
Yeah.
Alright, so May 12th, Bonin abducted and murdered a 17-year-old acquaintance of his, whom he later stated he decided to kill when he had awoken that morning because he was tired of having him around. The body of the acquaintance, Lawrence Sharp, was discarded behind a Westminster gas station. His body was found on May 18th, and his autopsy revealed that in the addition of being bound and sodomized, Sharp had been extensively beaten about the face and body, then strangled with a ligature. 1 week after the murder of Sharp, on May 19th, Bonin asked Butts to accompany him on a killing. On this occasion, however, Butts reported refused to accompany him. Operating alone, Bonin abducted a 14-year-old Southgate youth named Sean King from a bus stop in Downey, killed him, then discarded the body in Live Oak Canyon. Bonin then visited Butts' residence and bragged about the killing to his acquaintance. So that's probably where we're going to stop this week. So
wonder what's going to happen to Butts.
Because you don't generally want to tell someone like that. No.
Yeah.
So both are a piece of shit. But like, yeah, both serial killers don't like being told no, or they couldn't do something or can't do something. So piece of shit, both of them, and more to come. Anything you'd like to add to the first part of Shit Show?
There's way more to this than I thought.
Yeah, a lot more.
Like,
I mean, we're just now through a quarter of it.
Probably a 4-part episode.
3 or 4. I can see it being a 3-4 part. So, I'm curious. Like, I've already read it, but I've read so much, I kind of, like, I'm relearning in a way when I'm reading this. I'm curious to know what happens to Butts, what happens to the other acquaintances when it comes to their trial, because I don't really remember what exactly happened. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more death, a lot more rape. So,
and they just never stop.
No. So listener discretion is advised for these next coming up episodes, and like we talked about in the very beginning, because some people, these are triggers, and if we did trigger anybody, we're sorry. Didn't mean to, but we did put it in the very beginning of every episode, so.
Listener discretion is advised.
With every episode, just in case.
Some material may not be suited for some audiences.
Yeah. Alright, so we're on Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Google Podcast, Breaker, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcast, and CastBox. And you can do our social media.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Mysterious Mysteries 21 if y'all want to go over there and like, follow, share.
Give us some feedback. Anything y'all want to discuss in the future, let us know.
Let me know that I still always mess up the intro.
Yes, he does. Even if we try to change it around, he still fucks it up somehow. So far, the only people I've been hearing from, unfortunately, is my mother. Which is not bad, but she has given me quite a few different things, subjects to possibly talk about in the future. So, thank you for that. Also, thank you for the new listeners in Australia. I think last week, Australia jumped onto the bandwagon for listeners. So thank you for the listen. And again, like Cade said, Facebook, Instagram, Mysterious Mysteries at 21. Let us know who's listening, and we can give you shout-outs. So... that's all I have for today's episode. Sorry for the 2 week nothingness that happened with the podcast. We were really busy at work, so we didn't have time. We're just now getting 2 days off again.
I don't think they'd want, you know, a podcast with us on 2 hours of sleep.
No, that'd be interesting though.
A sleep deprived podcast. See how dark the jokes actually get,
or how stupid we sound.
Both.
But we can all blame Carrie, my assistant manager at work, for us having to overwork.
Going on vacation and stuff. What's that?
Yeah, who the fuck does that anymore? So, that's all I have this week. So, I hope y'all enjoy it. And we will have possibly the next part to the Freeway Killer next week.
So, come join us for part two.
And thank y'all for listening. Y'all have an awesome week.
Bye.